mentioned picking a quarterback's a marriage and falling in love and finding a guy. Can there be more than one of those guys?
There is, I believe. I agree, and I know. I hope my wife doesn't take that as anything negative.
Tread lightly there, Kwesi Adofo-Mensah.
He's in trouble.
Well, and look, in many cases, the search for and the actual finding of a spouse, a soulmate, whatever, is a matter of proximity, geography, and circumstance, and what circles you move in. I mean, that's the reality. So, you know, for the Vikings, it's a different situation altogether because their universe is all of the available quarterbacks, and they can't just go pick whichever one they want. They're at pick number 11, and even if there's a guy that they think is the one, we always talk about the one, if there's a guy that they regard as the one, and they can't get him without giving up too much, they got to move on to the other one, or the other one, or the other one after that. That's what makes this so difficult for the Vikings. Everybody knows, just like the Bills now at the back of the round, big blinking light. We want receiver for the Bills. We want quarterback is up there for the Vikings, which is a real problem, Shireen, for two reasons. If they try to go up to the top five, somebody's going to put their thumb on the scale. Just like when the Vikings had to find a quick replacement for Teddy Bridgewater in 2016 when he had the horrible knee injury at a practice in late August. They gave up a 1-4 to get Sam Bradford. Are you kidding me? And I remember Rick Spielman, the GM at the time, he was exasperated. Nobody's cutting us a break here. No, why should they? This is leverage. This is opportunity. This is a way to get more stuff to help your team get better because you know the other person is desperate. That's the spot the Vikings are in. And if they decide to just stay put at number 11, they're going to get jumped by somebody like the Broncos at 12 or the Raiders at 13 because the Bears just have a smattering of picks this year. They could trade down from 9. The Jets would love to trade down from 10 and get back the second-round pick they gave to get the delicate genius Aaron Rodgers. So I'm sorry for the gratuitous stray for Aaron Rodgers, but Read my post from yesterday about some of the stuff he said on some podcast recently, and you understand why he's at the front of my mind and should be at the front of yours as well. Regardless, and nevertheless, the Vikings are going to have to do something. They're either going to have to move up into the top five, or they're going to have to jump up into somewhere in the bottom five, or they're going to have to hope, and I spitballed about this yesterday, they're going to have to hope that 5 minutes before the draft, the NFL announces that as punishment for blatantly tampering with Kirk Cousins, the Vikings and the Falcons are flip-flopping picks number 8 and 11. Do we have Shireen?
Yeah, that would be interesting, Mike. And it would affect a lot of things, obviously, to have them do that. And I know you and Miles were going, well, it's just three picks. Well, it's not just three picks. It's up into the top 10. How does that affect the draft? But I do think that would be a possibility from the league. I do think it would be something that the Vikings obviously would like very much and the Falcons would not like very much. But it also would affect the other teams in there who might cry foul that the NFL has done this. But there has to be some penalty paid by the Falcons because it was such blatant tampering with Kirk Cousins. There has to be some penalty. Whatever that penalty is, there has to be a penalty paid, and that makes sense that that would be a reasonable penalty that they would have to pay for the tampering. It, you know, I think the Vikings also are really comfortable with whoever they draft at quarterback, whether that's Drake May, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, whoever that is, that if they were to stay at 11, whoever that quarterback would be, I think they're very comfortable because they think Kevin O'Connell can take whatever quarterback they give him and he will turn that quarterback into a at least decent player to give them a chance to win, if not a superstar player. It's kind of like Kyle Shanahan taking Brock Purdy, Mr. Irrelevant, and turning him into a Super Bowl, an NFC championship quarterback that can get you to the Super Bowl. And I think the Vikings have that same feel with Kevin O'Connell, that he's good enough to make that quarterback good enough to allow you to win and to compete.
I want to pull on this thread just a little bit because I hadn't thought this through. Not that it's ever stopped me in the past to spout off about things I haven't thought through. And there will be some who try to dismiss these ideas as fan fiction, right? Yeah, okay. We saw what happened last year with the Eagles and the Cardinals, how there was blatant tampering with Jonathan Gannon when he was the defensive coordinator of the Eagles. And it was a big deal that they managed to keep under wraps until 5 minutes before the draft. And that's when we found out about this resolution, basically a settlement that had been reached between the Eagles and the Cardinals, and it was all dropped out of the blue 5 minutes before the start of the draft. And yes, I know, well, I guess if they're going to let the world know it, they're going to do it before the draft. But to do it 5 minutes before the draft, it became far less of a story than it would have been if they had announced it even a day before the draft. The same kind of thing could happen here. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about crime and punishment. One of the things that will often happen with a prosecutor, what does the victim want? Like, what do the Vikings want here? If the NFL concludes, as they should, based upon the words that came out of Kirk Cousins' mouth at his introductory press conference, that the Falcons blatantly tampered with him in a variety of ways, what do the Vikings want? And if the Vikings would want a flip-flop of 8-11, maybe with some, you know, less than what would be market value additive to balance out the trade, you don't want it to happen before the draft. If you're going to get the eighth pick, Shireen, you want to get the eighth pick when the eighth pick is on the clock. You don't want the Broncos and the Raiders to know you're at eight because now they're looking to get to seven or six to get in front of you because you're at eight. So this is very complicated and nuanced, but how can we not at least have that possibility on the radar screen after what happened last year with the tampering we didn't know about? We know about this. And, you know, unless the NFL is going to brush it all under the rug, which they tend to do, and the presence of Rich McKay with the Falcons and on the competition committee has some wondering, are they going to get a pass like they have in the past? Like, I mean, their punishment for piping in fake crowd noise was less than what was imposed on the 49ers for this $75,000 accounting error that they made a few years ago. So it could be that, you know, there's value in having somebody in a position of influence and power, which is wrong if that's the case. But hey, stuff like that happens all the time. Anyway, it's just something to keep an eye on. Let's move on.
Yeah,
to go ahead. Go ahead. If you got something to say, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Mike, it is something to keep an eye on because it absolutely could happen. And I hadn't thought about it until you proposed it. You texted the text chain and said, hey, what about this? And I'm like, you know what? That's a reasonable penalty for them to pay based on history, based on what happened last year. If they hadn't done that last year, I don't know that we'd be talking about this, but because it did, I think it's a very reasonable punishment for the Falcons to pay. And they've got to pay some sort of punishment because of what Kirk Cousins said. It's just obvious. It's sort of like we have a video, they're going back and they're looking at video. It should be really easy to say yes or no as to what Kirk Cousins said, but he said it.
All comes down to how aggressive the NFL is in seeking out text messages, emails, other evidence of communications, surveillance videos of maybe Kirk Cousins, you know, showing up at the facility before he should have. How aggressive the NFL chooses to be will drive the quality of the evidence the NFL generates. And look, you're right. It's proper to think about these possibilities because of what they did last year, but that presupposes the NFL actually cares about precedent. I've yet to really see anything come from the league office that makes me think precedent matters. They just want to do what they want to do in each case. And that's why people will say, and they get upset when they say it, you guys just make it up as you go. Because they do. Because they don't want to be bound by their own precedent. They want to decide in each case what's right, because the commissioner might be balancing out how does this affect my ability to keep my job at the salary and bonuses I receive? Who do I have to keep happy here? It's more of a political thing than an exercise in properly applying the rules and the precedents created by the NFL. All right, good stuff. Oh, wait, I was going to throw to another bit of sound, but Gary has crossed it out. You know why? Because we've been talking too much about the other stuff. Let me throw to this. Kwesi Adosunmensah on the fact that they've already added an extra first-round pick via trade with the Houston Texans. So they now have 11 and 23. Here's Adofin Mensa on that twist to the Vikings' total draft picks.
We looked at a lot of different situations, and we said, in this situation, what is the best, you know, where can we be best suited to capitalize on the situation as the Vikings? Look at this situation, and across all four, we thought that this move set us in the right spot, right? So we looked at it as not just, hey, this is a more attractive asset if we went up, but it's also an insurance product, right, on different outcomes. Now, do you always use insurance? No. You could go your whole life and never get in a car accident. But if you did, you'd be really glad you had insurance. So we want to make sure that we set ourselves up for potential better look if a team picks up the phone, because they don't have to pick up the phone. But we also want to set ourselves up for, you know, being in a really good situation if they don't. We pick great players because, again, I know we talk about quarterback a lot, and it is the most important position in our sport, but it's the most important position in a team sport. It's not just getting the quarterback right. It's getting the quarterback right and the team around it.
When he talks about that pick as insurance, what he's saying is they want to use it to trade up, and they need to have it ready to go to use it to possibly trade up. They didn't acquire that pick to use that pick because, you know, as we said earlier, the strategy is you acquire a pick while the pick's on the clock so somebody else doesn't know you have that pick, and they're going to try to guess who you want and get in front of you and get your guy. They didn't get the Texans' 23rd overall pick with the intent of using it. They got it with the intent of trading it. That's where it's insurance. They've purchased this policy that can be bootstrapped together with the 11th overall pick and used to move up if that happens. Where they are walking a tightrope, Shireen, is the Patriots at 3, the Cardinals at 4, even the Chargers at 5. They are going to press that thumb down hard on the scale if the Vikings try to move up, because they know the Vikings are desperate to get a quarterback. You think if they call Jim Harbaugh, the team that spurned him when he thought he was going to be the head coach of that team, when he packed up his office and left in early 2022, fully believing he was going to get that job, and then he didn't, you think he's going to do them any favors? Hell no. So that's the problem the Vikings have.
Mike, the Vikings obviously didn't want to keep Kirk Cousins anymore. And maybe even 5 years ago, this would have been like major news. Like, that doesn't ever happen. Like, good quarterbacks don't leave teams. Like, teams don't let them leave. But they obviously did let him leave, because if they wanted to keep him, he would still be there. That tells me that, A, they didn't think they could get to where they wanted with Kirk Cousins, knowing that he was 1-2 in the postseason with the Vikings in 2 playoff appearances, and 2, that they really liked the quarterbacks in this draft. But having said that, there is a pecking order, and they do have the quarterbacks lined up in some way. That's what teams do. They rate these quarterbacks in some way. They rate players. They have their top 100, top 200. So they have these quarterbacks rated in some way, but they obviously like more than one or two of these guys to have let Kirk Cousins walk away thinking, we can have a better team, put better players around this quarterback on a rookie contract than we would have paying all this money to Kirk Cousins, who we are net 1-2 with in the postseason. So I know they like a lot of these quarterbacks, but there is a pecking order they have, and they like some better than others. And so they want to get up as high as possible to take that quarterback that they know they can get after the top 3. So that's going to be the goal, is to get that 4th quarterback, whoever that is, on their draft board.
And look, here's the real question. How much separation do they have?
That's right.
When you get past Caleb Williams, let's assume it's Caleb Williams 1, Jaden Daniels 2, and the Vikings aren't going to move to either of those spots, although they are having a private workout with Jaden Daniels. And I can't help but wonder whether or not they're trying to put ideas in Jaden Daniels' head that, you know what, the Commanders, kind of historically dysfunctional defensive head coach, a failed former head coach as the offensive coordinator, or I can go with this guy who, like, takes any quarterback that he gets and gets the absolute most out of him. Maybe I start jostling to not want to play for the Commanders. I just don't know what they're trying to put in his head and maybe they're positioning for a possible trade all the way up to number two. I don't know. But let's say it's Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels. Once you get past that, where does it go? How have you ranked them? And are you fine with any of the four? Whichever one of the four that we get, we're fine with them. Because we got Kevin O'Connell, who's going to get the absolute most out of whoever we get. That changes how much you're willing to put into the pot to move up. And there is a chance they just stay put. And if somebody leapfrogs us, so be it. We'll use pick number 11 on whoever's left. Are there going to be six quarterbacks taken in the top 10? Would that happen? I don't know. Are they willing to bet that one of those six guys is going to be there at number 11? Yes. Maybe it's, okay, we've got this 23rd pick, and if we can put it together with number 11 to move up to get one of the guys that we like a little bit better than some of the others, we'll do it. Otherwise, we'll just sit here, and we'll wait to see who's left after the first 10 picks. And we'll take that guy, and we'll make him into the best possible quarterback, and hopefully he'll be our franchise quarterback for years to come, joined at the hip with Kevin O'Connell, who hopefully will do well enough to be the coach of the Vikings for years to come. That may be the mindset, but look, we don't know unless they lay their cards on the table. They've got no reason to lay their cards on the table, but I think, Shireen, you know, your instincts are right. I think there's multiple quarterbacks they really like, and this 23rd pick is all about having the flexibility to potentially get one that they might like a little bit more than another one if the opportunity presents itself.
Yeah, it's going to, they're, to me, one of the most interesting teams in this draft, Mike, to see if they are going to trade up, how high they're going to trade up, what they're willing to give up to move up to get, again, the quarterback that they can possibly get who's rated highest on their draft board after Caleb Williams. Or is it the fourth quarterback on their draft board? Or where is that quarterback rated that they end up with? They're going to end up with a quarterback. I think we all, despite what he said, they're going to end up with a quarterback. It's just a question of who they're going to get, Mike, and how high they have to go to get him.
This is an age of mock drafts galore, mock drafts everywhere. We used to have a mock draft early in the process, long before everybody and their milk delivery man. Remember when they used to deliver milk to your house? Mm-hmm. Remember that?
I do.
Nice cold gallon of milk shows up at your door. Everybody and their milk delivery man now has a mock draft. We don't have one yet. And Matt Casey asked me yesterday, hey, when are you going to post your mock draft? I said, I don't know that I'm going to have one this year. It's all over the place. It's all over the place, and nobody really knows what anybody's going to do. And it's like, well, this is what I would do. This is what they should do. This is what I'm hearing. Like, there's a context to each one that really doesn't ultimately make it any more accurate. Something that I think could be more accurate than others, the intelligence that is available to the National Football League and how it gets translated to who is invited to attend the draft. 13 players will be at the draft. And I put my reporter hat on, the one with the little thing in it that says press, and actually did some work last night for a change to try to figure out how they got to 13, who else they were looking at, why certain names aren't on the list. J.J. McCarthy, for example, not on the list of the 13 attendees. Three quarterbacks are Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Drake May. J.J. McCarthy isn't on the list, I'm told, because they extended him an invitation. He didn't respond, and they just moved on. So those are the four quarterbacks who were invited. Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix were not invited because, I'm told, the league did not regard them as surefire top 15 to 20 draft picks. And they don't want someone to linger in the green room. They don't want someone to come back the next day. And again, I don't know how you get reliable information here because no one is going to want to show you their cards. No one is going to want to tell you, I'm absolutely going to take this player. You know, here are the 10 possible players we'll take with the 10th pick. Here are the 12 possible players we'll take with the 12th pick. Here are the 15 possible players we'll take with the 15th pick. I don't think anyone is going to entrust that information to anyone else, especially not to the league office, which can then take it. And you don't know that they're not going to tell somebody about it. I mean, I'm not saying that anyone would, but you'd be foolish to share that information with the office that is the conduit for all 32 teams. So, hey, I don't think Penix and Nix are going to be on the board when the round ends, but that would mean six quarterbacks taken in round one. But given all these teams out there, that need a quarterback,
yeah,
that are hoping to find a franchise quarterback, and that seem to be willing to use that first round pick on the possibility that they luck into a shortlist franchise quarterback, yeah, I think all six of those guys probably are going to be drafted in the first round.
Yeah, I think so too, Mike. Quarterbacks tend to go earlier than later. I know they wanted to avoid the Will Levis situation from last year when he wasn't drafted in the first round. This is a low number, though, Mike, of the draft picks. It's prospects attending the draft, 13 last year, it was 17. Pre-COVID, it was 22 plus all those pre-COVID years from 2015 to 2019, 28 draft picks attended in 2015. So really low number. We've tended to go down in these numbers. And all of these guys, I think, are pretty much guaranteed of going in the first round. So there's not going to be that long wait in the green room this year of somebody sitting there waiting it out. I think all of these guys are going to go pretty high. But J.J. McCarthy is the one to me that stands out, with the draft being in Detroit, doing what he did in Michigan and not being at the draft. I just think that's weird. And I don't know what happened. I don't know what the disconnect was. But to me, it's just weird that J.J. McCarthy, of all people, is not at this draft.
Yeah, and again, my understanding is invitation was extended. He didn't get back to them, so they just moved on. They weren't going to beg. They weren't going to wait. They were just going to, you know, they got to do what they got to do. There is a school of thought out there, and it is supported by other circumstantial evidence that the NFL is just choosing to not spend a lot of money on who attends the draft, that they've restricted the numbers because it's cheaper. You don't fly the kid there. And, you know, usually it's family members and it's hotel rooms. And I guess it all adds up. It's just this weird dichotomy. You've got a league that is getting closer and closer and closer to its stated goal of $25 billion in revenue by 2027. And they're pinching pennies about NFL Network and shutting down their morning program for 5 months and moving it to a free studio in LA, even though it disrupts the lives of everyone connected to the program. And they let four respected members of the on-air talent pool go last week. And there's an element of, we're going to choose the path that entails spending less money. And I haven't confirmed this yet, but there's also talk that they're going to have fewer remote setups this year with reporters at people's houses for the guys who aren't at the draft. So we'll see how it plays out. And if they are going cheap, it's going to be obvious in how it comes through in the production, the TV production. We'll see, you know, well, why aren't they at this person's house? Well, where's the roving reporter? Well, where's this person? Where's that person? We'll see it all play out in real time. But for now, tight list of invitees and the assessment that Penix and Nix, not locks in the top 15 or 20. I would disagree with that. But, you know, Will Levis lasted all the way through round one last year, and they probably – and I appreciate the fact that they don't want to embarrass the player, because it also embarrasses them. It makes it look like they don't know what their teams are going to do if they have guys there who last all the way through round one.
Yeah, it does, Mike. And, it, you know, back when they invited the 28 or 28 showed up in 2015, they actually invited more than that. You had guys, they had guys who were drafted in the second round and I think into the third round, and they did that purposely. And obviously they aren't doing that now. They want the guys who are there to be drafted in the first round and move on. So I'm sure money is an issue in this thing. Otherwise, why wouldn't you invite second round and third round guys and have guys there on the second day and the third day? Because to me, that's what makes the draft interesting when you're watching it on TV, is the reactions of those players when they are drafted, when they get that phone call.
All right, we're going to have some fun here before we take a break, because I've mentioned the possibility of six quarterbacks being drafted in round one this year. 1983, Shireen, back when we were in high school. Did you graduate in 83?
I did.
Yep, so did I. Yeah. We were just getting ready to get our caps and gowns. April of 1983, six quarterbacks were taken in round one. I'm just curious, how many of those quarterbacks can Shireen Williams name, especially because one of them wasn't drafted by the Dallas Cowboys?
Marino, O'Brien, right, for the Jets. Kelly.
What is that sound?
That's the bell sound.
All right. You're halfway there.
Yeah, I'm who are the other three?
Marino, O'Brien, Kelly. You're missing the most obvious one. One.
Who was number one?
Who made a power play, didn't want to go to a certain team in a certain city.
Oh, John Elway. Hello.
Okay, that's four. Hello.
That's four.
Another one is technically a colleague of yours now. Hello? College football, did a playoff game. Hello? Drafted by the Chiefs. Todd Blackledge, that's number five.
Todd Blackledge, yes.
Man, he's going to be disappointed. He's going to be disappointed. One of his colleagues remember he was a first-round pick in 83. And the last one started a Super Bowl. Started as many Super Bowls as Dan Marino.
Who was it?
Played for a team that had a quarterback that wore a horse collar. Tony Eason, Patriots.
Oh, Tony. Yeah.
Thrown to the Lions. Literally thrown to the Bears in Super Bowl 20. All right, that was fun. I would have had a hard time.
I was impressed. I remembered O'Brien.
I was not impressed. You forgot Elway.
There is that. We'll
forgetting Elway more than outweighs remembering Ken O'Brien.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it happens. It happens. You had no idea you were going to be asked a question. It just happened spontaneously, and I probably would have not remembered all six of them either. Okay, let's take a break. I mentioned the Cowboys. They did not draft any of those six quarterbacks in 1983. I don't know. Maybe they'll draft one of them this year because they got an issue at the quarterback position and other positions. We're going to look at some of these hot topics facing the Cowboys and get Shireen's thoughts on where they are and where they go from here when Friday's PFT Live continues right after this. Shireen's like Jimi Hendrix back there. That's dedication there. She's recording with one hand.
And
she's
writing.
Got backup. She's got the manual backup. I'm telling you, that's like, you know, like you see the guitars do the tricks, whether it's between their legs or they're playing, you know, playing with their feet. I mean, she's got it going on there. Oh, that's awesome. That is great. She did not, as far as we know, set her recorder or notepad on fire while she was with Jim Harbaugh that day. Although, I guess that would qualify as attacking the day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind to actually set your implements of your job on fire. It's good. Well done. Now, we were very impressed. I mean, that's got to be hard to do. Recording and taking notes, pressed with nothing flat to write upon. So, very, very well done. I don't know if you had seen that or had heard about that, but we were singing your praises for that balancing act you were performing.
Well, I do have a veteran trick. So actually all I was doing was time stamping from my recorder, time stamping the question so I can just go back to that point and not have to transcribe or listen to the whole entire thing. So I kind of sort of take notes, but not really. So that's my secret there.
But that makes sense because it is a pain in the butt to try to find the spot where the person said the thing that you care about, because there's a lot of stuff that they say that just isn't relevant to what it is that we do. We're looking for the best stuff, not just, you know, what the guy had for breakfast yesterday. We want to get to the most important things. When it comes to the Cowboys, there are some important things that are happening. I was on yesterday with Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan. We talked about the issues facing the Cowboys. We talked a little bit about the firestorm that Sean created last Friday by saying what he said on the air. For those of you who haven't heard it, here he is from 1 week ago with a comment regarding the team's supposed feelings about star defensive player Michael Parsons.
I have heard from way too many people this offseason, way too many. I'm talking about at least four different people that Micah has worn thin there. Now, I don't know how much is true and how much it actually hurts. I don't know whether this is the behavior of a typical superstar. I don't know how damaging it is, but all I do know is this. I've heard from way too many people. If Micah Parsons was out of there, there'd be a decent amount of people inside the Ford Center at the Star in Frisco smiling or breathing a sigh of relief. That is my hot take statement that to me is really close to factual about just dealing with him.
Making that take from Sean Sharif more compelling is the fact that 105.3 The Fan is the Cowboys' flagship radio station. They have the relationship. Jerry Jones is on there twice a week during the season. Stephen Jones is on at least once a week. And it will cause some to think that in some way this was planted by the Cowboys. I don't think it was. I think they have the freedom to share whatever they want to share, even if it might make the Cowboys upset and they're not doing the bidding of the Cowboys. But the other side of it, Shireen, it has that whiff of legitimacy that if the Cowboys don't believe it, I think it makes it incumbent on them to find a way to say this isn't true. They've got their own website. They had no qualms about taking some comments from C.D. Lamb and twisting them into something that they weren't. And I know the guy who wrote it is still mad about it. Sorry, you twisted his words into something that they weren't. Yeah, you put some qualifying language deeper in the article, but at the top of the article, you twisted his words into something that they weren't. They could have posted an item saying, Sean Sharif is incorrect. There's nothing about Micah Parsons that's wearing thin. And my big takeaway is, he's Micah Parsons. If he's wearing thin, you better thicken your skin because he's a generational talent and you deal with whatever it is that he's saying or doing that is causing you to become offended in some way because he's good enough. I mean, we talked earlier about the excuses that get made for guys who commit crimes. This guy hasn't done anything wrong. He just isn't afraid to speak his mind and he said some things that may rub people the wrong way. So what? He's not 53 on your roster, he's one or two on your roster.
You think about all the troubled players, Mike, that Jerry Jones has signed or traded for, various off-field or in-locker room problems from Charles Haley to Greg Hardy to Demetrius Underwood, Alonzo Spellman. We can't tank Johnson, Pac-Man Jones. We can keep going here. I mean, there have been a ton of them that the Cowboys have signed. Rolando McClain, the Cowboys have signed and put up with. Micah Parsons isn't that guy. He's a great player on the field. He's done nothing off the field to give you any sort of concern as far as we know. He's not in the headlines off the field. All he does is he goes on his podcast and he talks about the teams. That's what players do now. So if you truly have a problem with this, and I don't know if they do or they don't, but they need to find a way to get over that. He's your best player. He's one of the best players in the NFL. Top three defensive players, I would say, in the NFL. He's going to be that way for the next few years. He's going to be on your roster the next few years. You've got to get him signed to a long-term contract. Period. End of story. You can't trade this guy. You've got to get him signed to a long-term contract. He is that player. He's the guy you need on your defense. So whatever it is you have a problem with, you need to figure it out. And we don't know any specifics about if it's truly wearing thin. What is wearing thin? Him going on his podcast and talking all the time? I don't understand. I don't get this. But figure out a way. Get him signed to a long-term deal and move on.
There have been instances where he has stiff-armed the media. That doesn't, why would the team care about that? There are plenty of players that don't show up for their media responsibilities. And that's a matter between the league and the player, not the team and the player. He did criticize the coaching staff when he finally broke his silence after the embarrassing loss to the Green Bay Packers. I mean, so what? Again, it's Micah Parsons. You deal with it. And there are some that think that this is a clumsy effort by the Cowboys to drive down his pride. Like, it's not going to matter. And this is one of the big reasons why I believe that the Cowboys still haven't figured out how to handle young star talent. They wait too long.
Yeah.
They are too cheap. They are short-sighted. They think that being a member of the Cowboys has some inherent value that they should get credit for at the bargaining table. And it all started with Dak Prescott. The way they handled his contract, and I feel like history is repeating itself with CeeDee Lamb, and it's going to potentially repeat itself again with Micah Parsons, and they have a problem that may result in Dak Prescott walking away next year as a free agent.
It took them 2 years, Mike, to sign him the first time to that second contract. And now here we are. There does not appear that they're going to sign him this offseason. That doesn't preclude them signing him during the season. They're not like the Steelers. They will continue to negotiate. And maybe they sign him after the season. But at some point, you have to think that they're going to sign him. I wouldn't think they'd let him walk away. But now here we are. I wouldn't have thought they would have let him go 2 years without the first contract extension and then enter the new contract. And now that here we are, that they're letting him go into the last year of his contract. So who knows how this plays out? And now they're waiting. They have waited, not are waiting. They have waited too long on CeeDee Lamb, and they are going to wait too long on Michael Parsons. Mike, these deals only go up. They don't go down. Players at their other positions that sign, receiver position, edge rusher, quarterback, their players are going to continue to sign those contracts, and the price is going to continue to go up for the Cowboys. It's not ever going to go down. And so these guys are going to be top of the market, and the top of the market is going to keep going up. So they need to figure out a way to get these guys signed sooner than later. They're already past due on signing two of the three. And they're going to wait too long on Micah as well, because they've waited too long on the other two.
And Micah Parsons plays a position that puts him at far greater risk of injury than Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. I would not set foot on a football field if I'm Micah Parsons until I get my second contract, period. Whatever it is that he wants, whatever it is that he deserves, he needs to get it before he shows up and plays. And we saw what happened with Ezekiel Elliott. He took that position when it was time for him to get his second contract. He stayed away. He wasn't the same that year. That's the risk of having these holdouts. I think that's one of the reasons why we've seen so many of the franchise tag players and the transition tagged Kyle Duggar in New England sign deals early. So you're there for the entire offseason program and training camp and preseason, so you're ready to go and there isn't a drop-off. But if I'm Micah Parsons, I am not showing up until I get my contract for anything. Off-season workouts, mandatory mini camp, training camp, preseason, I'm not going to be there until they give me this contract. And they need to. And they think they can drag their feet. They think they can pull a rabbit out of their hat. And it blew up in their faces with Dak Prescott to the point where they might lose him next year. They might have to dare him to go find a better offer. And all it takes is one team to say, let's pay Dak Prescott more than the Cowboys will offer. And maybe it's going to take enough more that he does give up the inherent value of being with the Cowboys, because there is value there. But if somebody makes him an offer that is significantly more than what the Cowboys will pay, it's going to be just like Kirk Cousins walking away from the Vikings this year to the Falcons.
Yeah, they have drafted really well, Mike. And for the most part, they've done a good job signing those guys to second contracts and keeping them. But you're right. The one guy they signed when they should have signed him is Ezekiel Elliott. I guarantee you, if he hadn't done what he did and held out, he would not have gotten that contract when he got that contract. And it ended up being a great contract for Ezekiel Elliott. So absolutely, you're 100% right. If these guys want to sign now, they don't show up. That's what forces the Cowboys' hand, because Jerry Jones remembers what happened when Emmitt Smith held out for the first two games. They lost the first two games. And guess what? After those first two losses, he had his new contract. Jerry remembers that. So he's not going to let these guys not be there on opening day. So if you want your money, that's the way to do it.
And they need to do it if they want to have any chance to do something they haven't done since 1995, which is get to the NFC Championship game. All right, let's take a break. When we return, you know, just when I finally was willing to stop talking about the possibility of Tom Brady returning to play football, Tom Brady is talking about the possibility of returning to play football. We'll talk about that next here on PFT Live.
We get it. You're 100% retired.
Yes.
Let's say one day there's a situation, right? Maybe it's the 49ers, maybe, you know, heading to the playoffs, offense is great.
Patriots, somebody, Raiders, look, could be, you never know.
God forbid somebody goes down, would you pick up that phone?
I'm not opposed to it. If they would, I don't know if they're gonna let me if I become an owner in the NFL team, but I don't know if I don't know. I'm always going to be in good shape. I'll always be able to throw the ball. So to come in for a little bit, like MJ coming back, I don't know if they let me, but I wouldn't be opposed to it.
Tom Brady. Just when we were ready to move on from the possibility of Tom Brady coming back, suggesting that he wouldn't be opposed to the possibility of joining a contender late in the season. Here's the problem, though. If and when they approve his purchase of a chunk of the Raiders, he won't be able to come back. That was an issue that came up when the sale was first news. There would have to be a vote. I think it's a unanimous vote of all of the owners, at a minimum a vote of 24 of the owners, allowing him to play for the Raiders if he owns part of the Raiders. I don't see it happening, frankly, under any set of circumstances that he'd be allowed to play once that deal goes through. And clearly he couldn't play for some other team. I just, you know, my first thought, because I'm always looking for the next domino. Is this his way of letting a team know, any team out there that may be looking for a quarterback, that maybe doesn't get the quarterback it's looking for, give me a call after the draft. Give me a call. Maybe I'm ready to come back. The arm is going to be there into his 50s. And he's mastered the art of getting rid of the ball before the walls close in and he gets hit. He could step right through the door and play. He is better right now than I'd say a third of the quarterbacks in the NFL who are starting right now. And he's looking at that job from Fox. This is maybe his way to get all that. He's supposedly working so hard to get ready for Fox. Why would he throw that away and go back and play? I don't think there are accidents. I don't think there are spontaneous moments. I think anything that happens that is said is an indication of something else. Shireen, I think he's thinking about coming back and playing for somebody, not week 18. I think he's thinking about coming back and playing for somebody week one if the opportunity presents itself. And now everyone out there who might be interested in him knows there's a reason to make a phone call.
The question is, does he really want to play for a contender? Does he just want to play? You know, he said, I'm retired for good when he announced he was retired. And obviously now he's having second thoughts about being retired for good. But if you want to play for a contender, like there's probably only five or six of those guys, teams, and you can guess which of those teams are. And guess what? They all have quarterbacks. So if you really want a shot at another Super Bowl, then you probably wait at least a little bit and see if there's an injury to then come back. But if you just want to play, and he probably thinks that he can make any team a Super Bowl contender if they have at least a few parts around him. And hey, guess what? He did that with the Bucs. I mean, they had some good parts in place and he made them a contender. They wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without Tom Brady. There's no question about that. So maybe there's a team or two out there that he feels like if they had the quarterback and the right quarterback, that he could get it done. Unlike Peyton Manning, you talked about this, he could play to 50. Peyton Manning lost his fastball. The year they won the Super Bowl, he was not good. And he still didn't have he didn't have the arm strength any longer and all the things. You know, he still had the mind, but the body was failing him a little bit. You don't see that with Brady. Like, and I'm sure he's still working out and still doing all those right things. So I'm sure he could just step right in pretty much and play. Now, he had some problems with the playbook initially. He wasn't good early in Tampa days. So he would have to get that playbook and get going. But the question is, Mike, would he want to play for a contender, a true contender, or does he think he can make any team possible a contender just because he's Tom Brady?
And look, if he's thinking about doing it during the season, he's going to have to find a way to stay in shape while he's going from city to city as part of his Fox job that some still think he's trying to find an off-ramp from. That's why I hear what he said yesterday, and I'm thinking, is he actively looking for an off-ramp from this job that maybe he doesn't really want deep down to do? Maybe he fears the intense criticism, and you know what's going to happen. He's going to get roasted. There's going to be a segment of the population that thinks he is horrible, and they're going to relentlessly criticize anything and everything he says that can be fairly or unfairly criticized on social media. The other side of it, too, you've already got some concerns about, you know, if he's a part owner of the Raiders, are teams going to let him in other teams that compete with the Raiders directly or indirectly? Are they going to let him into practices? Are they going to let him into production meetings if he owns a piece of the Raiders? Well, now if he's openly musing about possibly jumping on board with a contender, you have a more immediate reason to be concerned about letting Tom Brady in. He's got to put this thing to bed before I'm letting him into my building, unless I'm thinking maybe I want him in my building because I may be calling him. And I also wonder whether after last year, with so many quarterbacks who were injured during the course of the season, does he regret not having that mindset that maybe he could have come back last year and played for one of the teams that were contenders that had an injury at the quarterback position and were willing to pick up the phone and make a call? You know, if the Vikings, his mom grew up in Minnesota, the Vikings call after Kirk Cousins blows out his Achilles tendon in Green Bay, would he have been willing to do that at a time when the Vikings were kind of positioned to make things interesting in the NFC? So I, it comes off as a throwaway moment, but I don't think Tom Brady is anything but fully strategic in everything he says and does. And I think that that is a far more significant comment than it seemed to be on the surface. I think that is, we talked earlier about the blinking red sign. Bills want a receiver. Vikings want a quarterback. Tom Brady is available. If you get to the other side of the draft and you're not happy with your quarterback situation for 2024, give me a call.
And guess what's going to happen, Mike, every time a quarterback goes down? And quarterbacks are going to go down. Unless he puts this to rest, every is this team, they're contenders. Are they going to call Tom Brady? And I would bet everything I own that they're going to call Tom Brady if they think they can contend and their quarterback is out for the season. There's no question about that. So this is going to be a season-long thing unless he puts it to bed and said, look, I'm working for Fox. I'm definitely retired. I was just joking around. It's going to be an issue every single time a quarterback is injured. Oh, they got to call Tom Brady.
And, you know, here's what will happen. I don't want to be overly cynical, but I've seen these movies before with different players and possibly with Tom Brady. He'll let the next few weeks play out. And if he doesn't get a call, then maybe he'll say, I was just joking. Or he'll get to the point where if it becomes an annoyance, he can't complain about this. Until he puts out this fire, he can't complain about it because he started it. He's the little pyromaniac who was rubbing sticks together and started this fire. So, it's all on him. And anything that we do to make inferences and guesses and write fan fiction about where it can go from here, it all traces back to him saying what he said. Because I think after taking a year off, after maybe dealing with whatever feelings of guilt that he might have been experiencing after that 2022 season that went sideways in his personal life, it could be he's gotten enough under control that he could get away with coming back and playing. And he still, I think, believes he can play. Remember, he said he doesn't want to retire and watch games and say, these guys suck, I'm better than them. Well, you're going to be watching games. You're going to be at games. You're going to have to hold your tongue saying, these guys suck, I'm better than them, if you don't come back and play. So I just think there's a lot more to this. Uh-oh, there's a tweet from Tom Brady. Don't tell me he's already trying to say that he was just joking. Okay, all right, good. I haven't seen the tweet yet, but Shireen, I just think there's more to it than what he said yesterday, and I think this is a trial balloon to see if, you know, if the Vikings aren't satisfied with any of their options in the draft, could they just kick this can here? They've already signed Sam Darnold for $10 million, but could they say, we're going to bring in Tom Brady as well and see what a year of him and Kevin O'Connell might produce? Crazier things have happened. And the Vikings were one of the teams that went Brett Favre late career, and look at what it did for them in 2009. Now, Kevin O'Connell wasn't there in 2009. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah wasn't there in 2009. But you know who was? Mark and Ziggy Wolf. They were there in 2009 when they rode Brett Favre to the brink of the Super Bowl.
You talked about rubbing the two sticks together. I think it was more than that. I think this was throwing gasoline and lighting the match. I think that's exactly what he did.
50K likes and I'll unretire, grow it back out. 50, hey, look, I don't know if he just wants a little attention, whether he's getting a little bored. I think the guy knows he can still play. And here's the reality. At some point, Father Time will render him completely and totally unable to play. Why would you not play the sport you love while you can? I remember when he retired last year, he said to Jim Gray on his podcast, "Let's go. I still love it and I still want to play." So whatever it was beyond football that caused him to take a year off, I just get the feeling by him saying what he said, that fire has been put out. So whether he's rubbing two sticks together, whether he's pouring jet fuel on it, lighting a match and running away, I'm intrigued. So we'll see how it plays out. Let's take a break. Shireen knocked off one of her lifetime sports bucket items this week at the Masters. We're going to draft our own sports must-do events when PFT Live continues right after this. There is Shireen Williams this week at the Masters for the practice round on Monday. Beautiful course. It's happening all weekend long. And one of the things Shireen always wanted to do, and it's great that you got a chance to do it, and didn't have your phone for the entire time, which I don't know that I'd be willing to make that trade-off, but a great thing. So, today's draft, in honor of Shireen getting to do something she always wanted to do. Oh, there's Tiger. Is that Tiger?
That's Tiger.
Is that Tiger? Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. So, in honor of that, our draft of the sports bucket items we have, sports-related bucket list items. Sports bucket, bucket list, they know who we mean. You're up first.
Well, I'm going to say first, thank you to Ron Vaccaro and Megan Franks for hooking me up for the Masters. That was just a total lifetime experience. I've done just about everything, Mike. Olympics would be one, Super Bowl would be two, and then there's a tie for three with Wimbledon and the Masters. The Masters was like golf's version of Disneyland, truly an incredible experience. So I've done just about everything, but I still have three or four things I really want to do. Number one would have to be the Rose Bowl. I've never covered a Rose Bowl before, never been there. Would like to go to the Rose Bowl parade and then go to the game just to see it because it is the granddaddy of them all.
And that's great. And it's such a great scene, you know, the afternoon sun and then the shadows get longer later in the day. And it's a shame they don't play Super Bowls at the Rose Bowl anymore, but they never would. They'd go to Kroenke Land when they inevitably go back to Los Angeles over and over and over again. But those Rose Bowl Super Bowls were always special. The Rose Bowl is a special thing every single year. Every major football game should be played at the Rose Bowl. First one for me is to, and I'm going to be very specific with these things, attend the Super Bowl as a fan. One of these years, when you least expect it, I'm going to say, go ahead and spread out your stuff in the press box. I'm sitting out in the stands. I'm going to experience this as a fan, not as a member of the media that's working during the game. And, you know, if the Vikings ever make it, that's probably the year it's going to happen, which means it'll never happen. You know, anytime I said to my wife, hey, if the Vikings win the Super Bowl, I'm going to get a tattoo. Do you have a problem with that? No, I don't have a problem with that because they're never going to win the Super Bowl. I mean, that's always her. Anything that is tied to that, it's fine. You can do it because they're never going to win. So that would be attend the Super Bowl as a fan. That's my first one.
That would be a totally different experience, Mike. And I would like to attend as a fan the Army-Navy game. I just think that would be a really neat experience. One of the rivalries I haven't experienced and would love to be there for an Army-Navy game at some point. We actually, Cowboys played at Philadelphia one year and they played there and I didn't go and I regret not going.
Next one for me, and this is a nod to my dad who took me to a lot of boxing matches when I was a kid. He took me to boxing. He took me to wrestling. I would want to sit ringside at a big-time boxing match. I just can't tell you when one is ever going to happen. If one ever happens again, a true old-school big-time boxing match, I want to sit ringside with a big-ass cigar.
That would be cool.
I don't think
to be that close.
It's never going to happen. There's never gonna be another big time boxing match. Let's take a break. We got one more round for you when PFT Live continues right after this. Wrapping up this Friday edition of PFT Live with the final round of our all-time sports-related bucket list items. Shireen, what do you have for me?
Well, Mike, I've covered 7 Olympics. I've covered a lot of Olympic soccer, and I'm not a huge soccer fan, but that is just a different level of soccer. So the World Cup is here in 2 years. I don't care if it's a first-round game. I think there's 9 games in Dallas-Fort Worth at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, right down the street from me. I don't care what, if it's a semifinal is here or a first-round game or whatever it is, but I would like to attend a World Cup soccer match just to say I've done it and to see the crowds and how excited they are for their countries, because I know how big that is.
Got a feeling we're going to be able to work that one out one way or the other, especially because it's right there. Here's my last one. And look, I've had these feelings stirred up a little bit because I've heard through the grapevine the Pirates are off to a good start this year. Not that it's going to last, because it never does. But to attend in person a Pittsburgh Pirates World Series game, again, they got to hold up their end of it. I know I can hold up my end of it because it's just up the road. But that's it for me. And I would probably get caught up in it at that point and attend every single one of them home and away if they ever get back to another World Series. And yes, I am a Fairweather fan. I'm sorry I did not stick with them through 30 years of crap, but it has been 30-plus years of crap since they lost the 1992 NLCS Game 7, Sid Breen beating out a routine hit from second base. Derek Bond's not throwing him out. I'm still upset about it 32 years later. Shireen, great work today. Everybody else, have a great weekend. See you Monday. Good week.